I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello there, and welcome to the Thursday, the 28th of April edition of the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast. I'm Barry Murphy, news correspondent here on the team. There's a bit of listening in this one, folks, for the long weekend ahead. On this week's episode, we're going to discuss how the Department of Agriculture is tightening the screw on MAP acres, a mechanism used by intensive livestock farms to generate payments and dilute stocking rates. We'll also look at the impact of milk contracts on farmers who are now caught receiving milk prices below the current market value. Togish analysis shows us that spiralling input costs will create a crisis for the suckler sector, and beef editor Adam Woods explains why beef farmers will need a price of €6 per kg next spring to make ends meet. The government has also launched plans for a new pension scheme, but farmers will be locked out of it. Acting news editor Amy Ford tells us why. There's also unease amongst IFA members over salary increases. Pesticide use and Board B's trade admission also feature. And finally, Niamh Gunn of our livestock team will bring us an update from the Emerald Expo dairy sale. And news for the paper on the shelves this week. First up, we're going to speak to our news correspondent Declan O'Brien on a department clampdown on MAP acres. Dec, first up, you might tell us what a MAP acre is and why they're used. I think this move is going to impact some of our more intensive farmers there, and a lot on this page one story this week. What way is it looking?
Well, at briefings over the last week, the department has indicated that it's going to clamp down on the use of these MAP acres, which are really when intensive lads take made up by purchase or long-term lease, commonage ground or hillland, and use that ground in either to generate payments or to dilute stocking densities on the home patch. This has been going on for quite a while now. It is contentious enough, both from the point of view of hill farmers who are looking to expand and find themselves kind of blown out of the water by the deeper pockets of these intensive livestock farmers. And also, it's been contentious enough from the point of view of discrediting, really, I suppose, the drive on water quality in that, because what you have is you've still got an increased problem on the home patch, which has been diluted by these MAP acres. So what the department have signaled is that they're going to clamp down on this, and what they had already brought down the kgs of nitrates, of organic nitrates, that could be generated on these lands from 240 to 170 kgs per hectare. But now they've pulled that again to 50 kgs, which equates to about 7 mountain ewes. Now, these lower limits are not going to impact sheep farmers because the stocking densities there are low anyway. But they will effectively, what this move is going to do is make the taking of these lands unattractive for intensive livestock farmers. So effectively, they're trying to call a halt to the practice.
it's definitely a contentious one there. That could be interesting to see how that one plays out. Now, you and Amy also spoke to some of the dairy farmers who've been tied into these milk contracts and are now being forced to take milk prices below the market value. You report on page 18 that safeguards are needed for these kind of schemes in future. The farmers are in a bad way now, though. What had they to say to you?
Well, that they'll lads to feel that they're working for nothing at the moment. You know, the latest figures from Tagus put the cost of producing a litre of milk at 34, 35 cents, and that doesn't include labour. These lads are down at 30, 31, and even where they're up at 38, you know, they're looking at actual prices now of 50, 51 cents a litre. And they're, in ordinary parlance, they're fairly well sickened. What they're saying is that, okay, they went into these contracts generally with their eyes open, but there was pressure put on by the banks to enter into fixed price contracts because it took milk price volatility out of the equation. And if they were taking out big loans, now nobody expected the hike in fertilizer costs and the hike in feed costs that have come this spring. You know, that they're unprecedented events. But the farmers are saying, well, they're saying two things. Look, at you've got to give us a dig out here in the short term. You know, this is a force majeure scenario. And the companies that have bought this milk are making a killing on it. But they're also saying that if something isn't done, the long-term credibility or the long-term feasibility of these forward contracts, fixed milk price contracts, are going to be, they're going to be reputationally hold below the waterline. You know, nobody is going to go into them because they're going to say, look at these lads. You know, some guys are out of pocket for serious amount of cash. They could be out of pocket for, I was talking to one man who's going to conservatively lose in milk earnings up on 40,000, and he could, in fact, he's more likely the losses are going to tip 50,000, you know. And he's saying, look, I'm an established operator. I can carry those losses for this year. But where it's smaller operators or new operators that are heavily indebted, they won't be able to carry them. And I talked to one farmer who had about 50 cows who said, look, I've been hit by animal health issues this year. This down on top of it, the fixed milk price, he says, I'm being eaten alive. And he's at a point where he's wondering whether he goes on next year or not. So they're saying if there is no recourse to link the for some kind of help out or a dig out for these farmers, they said other farmers are not going to go into them in the future. And they're saying at least in the future, link the fixed milk price schemes to input costs. So you put a dampener there, and that they can't be completely out of line. They can't be totally out of line with the cost of milk production.
Thanks, Dec. Looks like something's going to have to give there. Heading to our acting news editor, Amy Ford, next. Amy, we all heard tell of the plans for this new government-led pension scheme last month, but you report on page one that farmers would be locked out of it. How could this be the case?
Yeah, that's right, Barry. So the Department of Social Protection has clarified to the Farmers Journal this week, basically, that anyone that's self-employed will not be eligible to basically opt into this pension scheme in its current form. So that obviously includes farmers, and that's locking them out of the pension system, obviously. That pension scheme, that new one, it's an auto-enrollment pension. So everyone's opted in that hasn't got a pension, a private pension or a state pension, and then you need to opt out, basically, if you don't want to sign up to it. So as I said there, it's available to those who don't have a private pension through their workplace or it's separate to the state pension. So employers and employees will have to contribute about 1.5% of their salaries, with the state committing €1 for every €3 saved. So if in the morning we signed up to this and I put in €3, the state will give me back €1 for every €3 essentially that I put into that. But a person working in the farming industry in a self-employed capacity is not eligible, basically, to opt into this scheme. And under the terms, employees aged between 23 and 60 and who are earning over €20,000 per annum will be eligible. So that could include, you know, farm workers, farm labourers, relief milkers, anyone that's employed by a farmer could apply as long as they're earning over €20,000. And the department has told us that the government may consider broadening the system essentially outside to include the self-employed at a future stage, but it won't be including them this time.
Interesting, Amy. Look, you wonder how that will go down well at all. And Amy, look, on page 11, you also look at where we're at on the application for an Irish grass-fed beef PGI. This continues to be delayed, and you write that the UK is intervening to stall things further. Will it happen eventually, or are we likely to see this roadblock continue?
Yeah, this is going on over 18 months, essentially, and the industry has long called for a PGI. And what's a PGI, says you, that's a protected geographical indication. So that's an EU quality kind of stamp that aims to protect the names of certain products, which is then used in order to promote their unique characteristics. So, for example, Irish grass-fed beef. And product names can be granted at this geographical indication if they have a specific link to the place where they're made. So that's where this comes from. August 2020 is when kind of things kicked off officially. A national opposition procedure was held for the Ireland's PGI application for Irish grass-fed beef. So this opened the doors for Borbia to apply for it, for the department to send in support and documentation. And then we fast forward to last year. That doesn't make sense as you, but we fast forward to May 2021 on the timeline, and the European Commission responds to that application with technical queries suggesting that Northern Ireland could use the opposition procedure that was launched, basically. And so they have used that. So the UK government has essentially objected to the PGI going ahead in its current form, which is for Irish grass-fed beef only in the Republic of Ireland. The Irish Farmers Journal reported it last month that the UK had lodged an opposition submission to the PGI, and they did that on the 1st of March. Confirming it this week, Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConlogue, he said that following the European Commission scrutiny of the UK submission, it has asked both sides now to engage in appropriate consultations and to inform the European Commission of the results of these consultations, essentially. So both parties are essentially going to gather around the table or gather virtually and discuss how this can move forward to be more of an all Ireland PGI for beef from both Northern Ireland and from the Republic of Ireland. As I said, the application was for Republic of Ireland beef only, not Northern Ireland. So that is the kind of crux of the matter there. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the negotiations go with the minister. He said he's hopeful that the progress can be quick progress made, basically, to ensure that the PGI is kind of resubmitted, or that we come to an agreement so that we can have an all Ireland PGI for Irish grass-fed beef.
Sticking with beef, folks, we'll head to beef editor Adam Woods next. Adam, on page 3 of the paper, you tell a sorry state of affairs for beef and suckler farmers this week. You write that beef farmers will need a price of €6 per kg next spring to make ends meet. Togish has released new figures too, which show suckler farmers haven't spread fertiliser as input costs spiral. How bad is all this going to get?
Yeah, Barry, I guess this is looking forward. I guess at the moment, you know, beef prices is going pretty good and March trade is good, but looking forward as to where costs are going, and even in terms of costs at the moment, if we compare our beef price this year versus last year, we're really only treading water, and we're actually worse off. On Tullamore Farm, though, you know, the beef and sheep demonstration farm in Tullamore, our bull output price was 1,700 in 2021. That'll go up to 2,000 in 2022, but actually our costs of producing those bulls is going up by about €350. So while beef price has gone up and we're up to, I suppose, €300 a head, our costs are actually gone up €350, so we're actually worse off than we were in 2021. And this comes on the back of, I guess, a Chagas survey just completed for the National Fodder Group last week, and it shows that you know, really alarming rates. 45% of dry stock farmers plan to cut nitrogen rates on grazing ground by up to 30% in 2022. 27% of those farmers plan to cut fertilizer applications by 30-50%, and up to 50% of farmers up to the 14th of April had no fertilizer purchased on their farm. And this is a trend we're seeing. I know Niamh Gunn was out on a walk, a sheep walk in Cavan, during the week, and it was very, very similar for dry stock farmers. Fertilizer is not being purchased, and to be honest, it's just an income problem, and it's a cash problem. You know, I was speaking to a merchant in the West this week, and they said, you know, they have lads coming in with a ton fertilizer spreader, and they're only fit to put 5 or 6 bags in it because that's costing, you know, upwards of €300, and that's all they can afford to pay for. So it's really worrying as to what's going to happen going forward, because if we don't make enough silage this summer, we'll have huge problems on farms, I think, next winter. And you know, the autumn cattle trade, if we get offloading the stock, if we get dairy farmers pulling hard ahead of an expensive winter, we could see real issues on farms and real income issues on farms next autumn.
Thanks, Adam. Viability for many farmers at risk there anyway. And look, just on the Martin factory rounds up this week in the paper, how's the cattle trade looking as we come to the back end of the month? We have a neighbour here with some lumps of limousine bullocks at home. They're around the 26-month mark, and I'd say they're tipping about 750 kg. Is it better to head to the factory with them or let bidders fight it out for them in the mart?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess at lumps, there's obviously lumps are different down there than they are up here, because lumps up here be about 300 kilos, 750 kilos is a fair animal. But anyway, 750 kilos, you're probably talking, it's debatable whether you go to the mart or go to the factory. I tend to go to the mart, to be honest, at the moment, because you have a lot of agents really fighting it out around that ring at the moment. And if you look at mart bids analysis this week, in terms of the top third of steers in the 600 plus kilo category, we're up at €3.08 a kilo. The average is back at 277. But if that animal was in that top range at 308 at 750 kilos, they're coming in at 2300. In the factory at a 55% kill out, possibly 56, you're probably around 2100, 2150. So there is money there, I'd say, in the mart at the moment in terms of selling those animals in the mart at the moment. That could change in the future, but I'd say mart is a spot, especially with low numbers. If you have higher numbers, factories tend to maybe do some deals and maybe increase quotes, but with lower numbers, I'd say the mart is the place.
Very good. He's fed them well now, so you'd hope he gets the price for him.
Very good.
Thanks, Adam. Look, we'll head to news correspondent Rachel Donovan next. Rachel, you've looked at the news from Irish Water this week that there were less pesticides in Irish drinking water in 2021. Welcome news on that front, I'd say. But look, what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, Barry, that's right. Irish Water has said that there were 42% fewer pesticide exceedances in Irish drinking water in 2021. This was according to the results they received from their monitoring program. This was actually a decrease of 34 from 2020. So in 2020, there was 81 exceedances. And last year, 2021, there was just 47. So again, MCPA is the most commonly found pesticide in drinking water sources. And you'll find MCPA in sprays like Lupo. You can get straight MCPA, it kills rushes, docks, dandelions, that kind of thing. So I suppose maybe there is a bit of an overuse of that particular spray in areas. I suppose some of the priority areas that Irish Water is still particularly concerned about, where they're seeing frequent pesticide exceedances, Longford, Newcastle West, in County Limerick, Belturbet in County Cavan. You'll see the rest of the full list there in the paper. But I suppose the main piece of advice is don't be spraying recklessly. And Irish Water have said to leave areas unsprayed and let native flowers, flower and plant species grow.
It's good to see the figures go one direction anyway. Farmers aren't doing everything wrong, I suppose, on the climate front. And look, Rachel, you just very briefly, there was news from Ag House this week that a poultry housing order has been lifted. The avian influenza risk is gone, or is it's just, I suppose, this is the way these things go kind of at the back end of the coming out of the winter. How was it lifted and what's the state of play now?
Yeah, we got news on Tuesday, Barry, that the housing ban would be lifted. I suppose this was welcome news, as all poultry had to be kept inside since last November. I'm sure you would have noticed this on the eggs in the supermarket, which would have said barn eggs. This restriction, I suppose, was in place to try and mitigate the spread of bird flu, which was a big issue around the back end of the year and even into the new year. In counties like Monaghan and Cavan, there was lots of poultry farms had to completely clear out of birds due to the disease. So, yeah, so from today, Barry, all poultry owners, from big and small to commercial to even just owning a couple of birds, or hens or whatever it may be, they'll be able to let them out and access open areas and runs. But I suppose the advice from the department is that owners are still reminded to remain vigilant and look out for any signs of disease in their birds.
Thanks, Rachel. So look, you can open the doors to the chicken coops now, folks. Brilliant, Rachel. We might come back to you in a little bit. Finally, look, we're going to head to our political correspondent, Pat O'Toole. Pat, you have a few updates for listeners this week. We might start with our sit down on page 14 with Minister Martin Hayden. He's told you no stone has been left unturned on getting beef access to China. What's the state of play with the trade brief now?
There are concerns because it's almost 2 years now since there was an atypical case of BSE discovered in Ireland. And China immediately banned Irish beef from their market on health grounds. And since then, it's been established it was an atypical standalone case. It was a 14-year-old cow. It's very unlikely we will have another BSE case as a legacy of the epidemic, I suppose, of the late 90s in the UK, which spilled over into this country. But having said that, China have not opened up the Irish market. And Minister Hayden explained that his officials had answered every question that had been asked of them, and that, you know, Ireland's health status is now of our cattle herd is now higher than it was prior to that isolated case, but that it's completely up to China and the Chinese officials as to when we get back in. He did acknowledge the practical difficulties that China are facing at the moment. They are bedeviled by another COVID epidemic. We're seeing it affect global trade. There's as many as 5 million containers sitting at the port outside Beijing at the moment, which is going to have a knock-on effect on global trade for all kinds of goods. And that is a window into what is quite still a closed country as to how affected their economy and their society is by COVID. But the reality is that there's also a political dimension. And while the minister wouldn't be drawn on it, Ireland's presence on the UN Security Council, where we're one of the five rotational seats, is a complicating factor for Ireland because we have made decisions that China is not happy about on some issues. And whether that's a factor in the leveraging of reopening the Irish beef market or not, it's hard to define, but it certainly can't be helping. It can't be helping.
Thanks, Patrick. It'll be interesting to see what way that plays out. And look, just staying with Minister Hayden for the moment, we know he's out in Mexico and the US this week, as well as Minister McConlogue as part of Board Meat's trade mission. They've gained full access for Irish sheep meat to the US market. Is it likely to drive prices wild at home, or will it make any difference?
It certainly won't hurt. I mean, the US market should be a high value market. There is scope for us to exploit the fact that New Zealand and Australia's presence on the US market has reduced because of the increased demand in China, which is much closer to New Zealand and Australia than the US is. So it makes more sense for them to export there. In contrast, for Ireland, the US is our nearest neighbour to the west. It's still quite a hike, but it's only about a third of the distance to the east coast of the US for Ireland than for New Zealand or Australia. So we have a competitive advantage there. Ireland are, believe it or not, the fourth largest exporters of sheep meat in the world, behind the UK, Australia and New Zealand. The UK are now locked out of free access to the EU market, which is a help to Ireland. And of course, the EU also has changed its trading relationship with New Zealand and Australia because they came into the EU with Britain when Britain joined the EU in 1973, and they gained access through historical trading arrangements they had with the UK. So when the UK joined the EU in 1973 and Ireland, the four largest exporters in the world of sheep meat, all came into the EU at the same time. We're the only ones left in there, which is an advantage within the EU market, which is still a very high value market. And of course, as the Muslim population of Europe increases, sheep meat is a meat that they use predominantly. And it means that Europe is still going to be the target market for the majority of Irish sheep meat. But having the US as a new market open to us, and we're fully approved now, is good news. And it should certainly underpin sheep prices, which at the moment are good. Whether they go much higher or not, we'll have to wait and see.
Very interesting, Pat. Yeah, look, it'll be interesting to see. I see Board Bia are pushing the green credentials of Irish lamb to kind of increase that US market for us. Look, we're doing well for a small little country there, producing so much sheep meat and exporting so much sheep meat. We might move to the IFA or to agriculture politics next, Pat. We see dissent in Cavan IFA on page 4 of the paper this week. A lot of people with a lot to say on these IFA leadership salary increases. Has President Tim Cullinan left the door open for criticism, and where is this going to lead?
I don't know if it's going to lead anywhere, but certainly he's under a bit of pressure on this issue. Some people are coming out because they're disappointed in the people who backed him. Tim Cullinan was one of the people who moved against Pat Smith back in 2014. In January of 2015, early 2015, the IFA AGM was held, and four county chairmen brought a motion of no confidence against Pat Smith. Tim Cullinan was one of those. Derek Dean was another. It failed on the day, and that was the end of that. But then events conspired later in the year to see Pat Smith resign, when Derek Dean revealed that Pat Smith was on the pay level he was on, the high pay level, and Eddie Denny, the president, soon followed. And Tim's role in the events of that time mean that he is vulnerable to criticism on the fact that he is now on a pay scale of or a remuneration of 140,000 from the IFA, only 7,000 shy of Eddie Downey's payment. That said, Eddie Downey was also receiving external payments from his directorships as the IFA president on FBD and Board B, amounting to some 60,000. That money is still being paid out nominally to Tim Cullinan, because Tim holds both those positions as president of IFA, but that money is actually going straight into the IFA's coffers. So Tim's presidency is really costing about 80,000, about 80,000 euros a year net. Whereas Eddie Downey was receiving about 147,000 from the IFA and getting the other money on top. However, optics are very important when you're the president of an association with over 70,000 members, many of whom are struggling on low incomes, and they're paying their memberships and their subscription to get representation. And we'll be looking very closely at the remuneration levels of the senior positions. So I think that the criticism is coming from places where Tim Cullinan did very well in the election. When we're looking at Cavan, that's a new dynamic, because previously we'd seen the criticism coming from Cork, from Kerry, from Wicklow, where the opposing candidates to Tim had strongholds in the recent election, John Coughlin and Angus Woods. It was quite a fractious election. It seems there's some bad blood out there still. Of course, the other issue is the next election, and people are positioning themselves for a tilt at the presidency. Tim is now in the second half of his four-year stint. And as we move through 2022, there will be an election sometime in the back end of 2023, around November of 2023. And it's quite likely that senior people within the IFA will be posturing to get themselves in a position where on the right side of this issue.
Definitely one to follow there, Pat. Thanks a million. Sticking with the IFA now, folks, we'll head back to Rachel, who was at the Fingal Home Garden Centre in North County Dublin, where the IFA hosted a community engagement day in association with An Garda Síochána. She spoke to Assistant Garda Commissioner Paula Hillman, Minister for State at the Department of Justice James Brown, IFA President Tim Cullinan, and IFA Crime Prevention Executive Barry Carey. We hear from all of them now.
Assistant Commissioner Paula Hillman, what are the main rural crimes that Gardaí are dealing with and seeing on a weekly basis?
Well, on a weekly basis, as well as trespass and poaching as well, we would see thefts, a lot of thefts being reported from a lot of rural properties and farms. And this is very much why we have the National Community Engagement Day that we have today, because we would ask people to mark their property, to have it clearly marked, if possible, to photograph it. but also to be part of that rural community of the text alert, that they can share that information within communities, and also get to know your community guardie, because we know very much about that relationship between rural communities and the guard, and how much that means to build that confidence in rural policing.
And what is your advice for farmers to how best to secure their farmyard or their homes?
Well, firstly, to ensure that they're locked up and secured. And I know that at times that's difficult when farmers are out on their land and actively working on it. But when not using their equipment, that it's securely locked, to have it marked, to have it visible, to use ours. Many of our crime prevention officers can help with marking and serial numbers and of property, to have that done, to photograph property, and then also to work closely with the text alert, because I think that's a really good forum, working with those other partners about how we can advise people if there has been suspicious activity in areas. But also, if anybody witnesses what they think is suspicious activity, please don't hesitate to tell us in Garda Síochána, and we can look into that.
Minister of State at the Department of Justice, James Brown, do you think the current trespassing laws are strong enough, and do you think they should be reviewed?
Well, I think any review of the trespassing laws needs to be done in consultation with landowners. So, look, we have a very beautiful country here, and I think it would be ideal if it could be opened up a bit more to walkers and people who want to go out and about. But that can only be done in a way that protects farmers and protects those landowners, that they're not put at any risk. And I think where people are, you know, maybe going onto land with permission, that they are doing it, taking their own risks into account as well.
And I suppose, what is your department doing to help combat rural crime?
So obviously, you know, we've just come through a pandemic and crime numbers went down, but mostly because it was very difficult for people to actually commit crime during that pandemic. But so we're seeing probably more normalisation happening in rural Ireland. So what we're doing within the Department of Justice, obviously we've days like today, Community Engagement Day, which is hugely important, and trying to strengthen those roles. So we're increasing the number of Gardaí. There's another 800 Gardaí approved to be trained in, and another 400 civilian staffed for the Garda Síochána, which will help release Gardaí for active duties. But then also the realisation that was acknowledged in the future of policing, that policing isn't simply a matter for Garda Síochána. It has to be all the different community groups coming together, with the Gardaí taking the lead and working. And that's what we're really looking at the Department of Justice now, that it's a whole of government approach and a whole of community approach to protect rural Ireland.
President of the IFA, Tim Cullinan, why are you here today, and what concerns do you hear from farmers in relation to rural crime?
Look, sure, we're out here in North County Dublin today meeting some of our members, obviously, and what's very important for us on a day like today, our engagement with the Gardaí, and I suppose it's always very important that we see the Gardaí, particularly up and down rural Ireland, and out here close to Dublin, but still a very rural area. And a lot of good work has been done, particularly up here in North County Dublin. The engagement between our people in branches and executive here in Dublin with the Gardaí. And I suppose, look, we all know the concerns around rural crime. I suppose number one is to ensure that people feel safe living in their own homes. I think that's very, very important. And that they can go about their business without being attacked or whatever. And I suppose the other aspect then is obviously robberies on farms, you know, people coming in and stealing equipment off farms. And that's the reason we're out here today. And I think it's excellent that we have this opportunities to engage with the Gardaí, and that's very, very important for our farmers and in particular rural Ireland.
IFA Crime Prevention Executive Barry Carey, why are we here today, and what are the concerns you hear from farmers?
Well, we're here today because it's part of the National Community Engagement Day, which is the part of the National Rural Safety Forum, of which the IFA are co-secretary and co-chairs. Deputy President Brian Rush chairs with Assistant Commissioner Paula Hillman. And one of the four pillars is community engagement. And around the country today, we have 800 locations involving all of the members of the National Rural Safety Forum. And then through all of the IFA branches around the country, we've over 800 locations today. The concerns of farmers, well, here in North Dublin, over the last number of years, we've had some very serious assaults, which have included members being hospitalised from assaults where there was farm invasions, what we call illegal hunting and trespass and criminal damage. We've had sheep kills, animal worrying, that type of particular thing. We've had burglaries, vehicle theft, farm machinery theft, all of those. And what we have are the communities in North Dublin and surrounding areas. And then coordinating that with the rural crime group, in which we have a WhatsApp group. We have over 500 people on two separate WhatsApp groups. And it's in our immediate reporting system. Somebody sees somebody, all they're doing is no more ringing the local Garda station. It's 999 or it's 112, a direct reporting line. And all you're doing is going. People think that, you know, 999, oh, I can't ring 999 because it's an emergency. You're asked what service you're asked for. Do you want fire, ambulance or Garda? You ask for Garda, I'm reporting a suspicious activity, and you say where it is. If you have a road number or an air code of the location, you give it in. And that's what's making the communities proactive in supporting Garda Síochána tackling crime in those specific areas.
A great initiative. Well done to all there. Finally then, for this week's podcast, our livestock team's Niamh Gunn spoke to Judge Paul Hannon at the Emerald Expo Dairy Show in Virginia Showgrounds, County Cavan, last Saturday. He tells us what he looks for when judging dairy stock. Niamh, over to you.
So, Paul, what are you looking for in a cow?
I like a cow with a lovely dairiness, femininity right through it. I do like a cow with plenty of milk, with full of milk of udder, and I like a cow with a real good udder.
And what are you looking for in the udder and when they're walking?
I like to see a cow that has a good set of legs on feed, because cows have to walk the fields every day. And if they haven't got a good set of legs under them, they cannot walk there. So I like that. And I like to see a cow with a full udder, full of milk, high rider udder, because we are actually paid on milk. And if we don't have a full udder, they don't produce milk.
And is the head or anything else important when showing?
Yes. If you haven't a cow with a feminine head, neck and shoulders, they don't milk.
What did you think of the stock here
today? Unbelievable. It was actually a pleasure to judge it. And I have judged the shows, a lot of shows in Europe. But this is as good as anywhere.
Thanks, Paul. You can visit thefarmersjournal.ie to get a full report on today's sale.
Thanks, Niamh. And folks, that's all we have time for this week. Remember, you can also tune to our Down to Argue Business podcast for this week. Jack Kennedy, Anne Finnegan and Fionnuala O'Neill debate what has delayed the Irish beef PGI application, what a scarcity of palm oil means, and how Carberry results show them doing more with less. More on those stories and everything discussed today in this week's paper. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the long weekend and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.